السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على رسول الكريم. Now I realize that you've been sitting for a while, and I understand that refreshments are going to be served soon after my lecture. I can see some of you are thinking you need it now. But let's hope that my talk itself will inshallah be refreshing with a good feedback of energy from you. If I see your faces smiling, if I see your eyes twinkling, I'll know that I'm saying something well worth listening to. Now, some of you came out here today just because you want to be better Muslims. And in that case, my talk to you might seem a little bit irrelevant. But to make my talk relevant, I'd like to just repeat for you something that our brother Gary Miller put before us. He said that garbage removal is a very important task. Because you might have a very beautiful house, but if the enemies come and they pile garbage in front of that house, eventually nobody is going to be able to see how beautiful is your house. So somebody has got to remove the garbage. And it just so happens that in our present time, brothers and sisters, garbage removal is a full-time job. Because there's so much that is being piled up at the doorstep of Islam. Somebody's got to remove that garbage. Now, I thought that this piece of garbage was only in the Toronto area. But then I can see you're nodding already. You've seen it here. So Brother Tanvir said you've got to speak about this subject because this material is being distributed here in the UK. All right, so what is this? Here is a little comic book type of presentation. It looks very interesting, and the title, of course, has got the green color on there, so Muslims associate that with the dome of the Prophet's mosque, sallallahu alayhi wasallam. Brother Faisal, I see you're wearing lovely green. And it's got the moon and star that Muslims are very familiar with. And look at the title of that book, Allah Had No Son. So a Muslim finds this in the subway train riding in Toronto and thinks, oh, here is a nice piece of Muslim literature. Or if a Christian gives this to a Muslim, the Muslim thinks, oh, the Christians are now converting. Finally, they understand Allah had no son. But the title and the face of it is deceptive, because when you go into the material, you realize that what it shows is that Muslims are worshipping a false god, that Allah is not God. So we can say that Allah had no son and still be Christians because Allah really is not God. This is what they're trying to say here. So who do they think Allah is? The comic book presentation shows that a Christian man speaks to somebody who looks like a mullah. He's like all his get-up and everything is quite clearly so. And this Christian eventually convinces the Muslim that what you are worshipping when you're making sujood is not the unseen creator of the heavens and the earth, the God of the Bible, the God of Isa alayhi salam, but you are worshipping a pagan god. You are worshipping what was the moon god that was worshipped in Arabia. And that the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wasallam, in order to gain following for himself, he wanted to tell the people that what you're on is okay. So you know this god that you have, this moon god that you worship, you can continue worshipping him. Just say that there is no god besides this one. And the people used to say that this one has daughters, Lat, Uzza, and Manat. You just say that he has no daughters. But the same moon god that you used to love to worship, you can continue doing that. Now, because he is using some names, some bits of evidence, some information which is true, one gets the impression that obviously the writer knows what he's talking about. When he mentions Lat and Uzza and Manat, when he mentions the daughters of Allah, and when he can refer to a certain passage of the Quran which actually makes reference to the people saying that Allah has daughters. So one thinks, yeah, these people are on the right track. They know how to write a book. As Gary Miller said, these people know how to write books. Because in the beginning, you will find an introduction, you will find a preface, and then at the end you will find a bibliography. You will find an index page. And so you get the impression that these are really scholarly individuals putting before you information. Now, where does this information come from? For this little booklet, I see that there is a constant reference to a book written by a certain Dr. Robert Morey, a book entitled The Islamic Invasion. So I went and got his book to find out what is happening here. What is he saying in that book? Where is his evidence? And in fact, after he had written The Islamic Invasion, a couple of years later, that scholar wrote this book, The Moon God Allah in the Archaeology of the Middle East. And this is where he puts forward his argument in a more concise and, in fact, more persuasive manner. He gives archaeological evidence. Again, if you look at his book, you think that everything here, you know, is well documented. He gives you pictures of archaeological discoveries of the ancient moon god. He gives you maps, drawings, illustrations. So one who reads this becomes convinced. Look at his footnotes. His footnotes are all well-referenced pages of it. So one thinks that all of his material is sahih. But then, when I actually go through the material and I look at the books that he's quoting from to prove his case, I see that he's quoting from this book, Islam by Caesar Farah. I see that he's quoting from Alfred Guillaume's Islam. So I go out and I buy the books myself, so I can check these quotations and see where these ideas are coming from. And when I check these books, I see that the man quotes one thing, and the sources from which he quotes usually say the other thing. For example, he quotes from Caesar Farah's book just one sentence. The sentence he quotes is this: "There is no reason, therefore, to accept the idea that Allah passed to the Muslims from Christians and Jews." Now that's the sentence he quotes, and that's the point he wants to prove. He wants to prove that the Allah that Muslims worship is not the God of the Bible. So what does he find? He finds a convenient quote right here, which says, "There is no reason therefore to accept the idea that Allah passed to the Muslims from Christians and Jews." But that's not everything this author has said. If we take the entire paragraph, which begins on the previous page, it says, "Allah, the paramount deity of pagan Arabia, was the target of worship in varying degrees of intensity from the southernmost tip of Arabia to the Mediterranean. To the Babylonians he was Il, God. To the Canaanites and later the Israelites he was El." It's very important. To the Israelites he was El. In other words, you're talking about the same God of the Bible. "The South Arabians worshipped him as Ilah, and the Bedouins as Al-Ilah, the deity. With Muhammad he becomes Allah, God of the worlds, of all believers, the one and only who admits of no associates or consorts in the worship of him. Judaic and Christian concepts of God abetted the transformation of Allah from a pagan deity to the God of all monotheists. There is no reason, therefore, to accept the idea that Allah passed to the Muslims from Christians and Jews." You see, when you read the whole passage, you get such an entirely different understanding than what this man is quoting, that it makes you wonder, is this man writing as a Christian? Or what is he writing as? Because the Christian friends that we have, that we live among, that we work with, that we go to school with, show us a different approach towards their understanding of Islam or their willingness to learn about Islam. You must have found that from your own experience. People out there are willing to learn if we will just give them the right message. A different approach is taken by this Christian author, John Gilchrist, in his book entitled Our Approach to Islam, Charity or Militancy. Now I'd like to refer to a relevant section in his book where he deals with this whole question as to whether or not Allah of the Muslims is the same as the God of the Bible. And in a nutshell, he says that although we have different understandings of him, really, Muslims and Christians are speaking about the same God. I'd like to read for you some of his writings firsthand. He writes on page 20, "The Christian writers who endeavor to distinguish between the Allah of Islam and the God of the Bible invariably concentrate on what Allah is not. He is not the Father of Jesus Christ. He is not triune. He has no son, etc. Rarely is there an evaluation of who Allah in Islam really is. It would seem to be logical, before we express ourselves in convenient denunciations, to inquire what the Quran actually teaches about Allah and how He is defined in that book. Firstly, it is quite apparent from the Quran that the name Allah did not originate with Muhammad. The pagan Arabs openly acknowledge that beyond their various deities and idols, there was one supreme being who was the ultimate source of all things. If you should ask them who created the heavens and the earth and subjected the sun and the moon, they would surely reply, Allah. Surah 29, verse number 61. When faced with disasters, they cry unto Allah. Surah 10, verse number 22. And they also swear their strongest oaths by Allah. Surah 16, verse number 38. Western scholars agree that the name has pre-Islamic origins and that it is almost certainly derived from the Syriac Christian Allah. You see, and I can go on and on, just to show you that the information is there for one who wants to find that correct information. But the author on whom this comic book depiction depended, obviously is not